we still have a much larger collection of Christmas sweaters than I really ever saw for myself. Like,
yeah,
I did not know what middle age had in store for me at all. I was way wrong.
Well, these ones are the straight up Christmas trees. Like,
but they're hoodies. It's different.
Yeah, it's a sweater.
No. It's a hoodie.
A hoodie's a sweater.
A hoodie's a light layer with a zipper. A sweater is something that you wear for pictures and then you take off immediately because it's so hot.
See, that's why I like the zip front sweater or the button-up cardigan. You got to have that front opening because otherwise it's just too hot.
I take issue with you saying hoodies aren't sweaters. They are categorized in the same way as thick cloth that keeps you warm. Also, have you ever had a thick hoodie? It's better than a sweater.
I've had we live in Denver. I have hoodies of all thicknesses, for sure. They are not sweaters. Sweaters are scratchy. Hoodies are soft. Sweaters are not hoodies. Hoodies are not sweaters. These are separate items.
No, I think a hooded sweatshirt is just a sweater with a hood.
A sweatshirt, a hoodie may be akin to a sweatshirt, but not a sweater. And sweatshirts and sweaters are very different. You cannot tell me you think sweatshirts and sweaters are the same thing.
I have several hoodies in like the same fabric as this sweater. The difference is it's got a zipper and a hood.
You're wrong. Sweaters are scratchy.
Not all sweaters are scratchy.
No, not all sweaters are scratchy.
I think you're talking about specifically a yarn knit sweater is scratchy. That is a subgenre of sweater.
The important topics are really what we're digging down here.
I want all of this left in because I want outside opinions. Email us at whatever our email address is.
GiftedKidMessyAdult@gmail.com.
GiftedKidMessyAdult@gmail.com.
Rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah.
Smash that subscribe button.
And the bell. Yeah. Hello and welcome in to another episode of Gifted Kid Messy Adult, the show where potential went to die. I'm one of your hosts, Ellie Michaels. I use she, her.
I am your other host, Jessica Michaels, and I use she, they.
And today we're talking about sleep and the lack thereof. Oh God, I killed her.
I'm so tired. What made you, because we did not know before we recorded this episode that I would overshoot my window for my sleepy drugs, and which are prescription, by the way, and like
needed.
Legally prescribed and needed. But I took them last night, did not do all of the things I needed to do to fall asleep soon enough so that by the time I was ready to go to sleep, the sleepy from the sleepy meds had passed, and I ended up being awake until 5:33, which is when I finally came back to bed. So we did not know that this was going to happen. So that was not the impetus for the sleep episode. What was, Miss Ellie?
Actually, it was a couple of TikToks by Katie Soros, a really great neurodiversity advocate and educator. Check her out. There will be links in the show notes. But it's a thing that she hits on pretty regularly, that like 95%, like as good as all, neurodivergent people have issues with sleep.
I think she said ADHD. In the last video I saw, ADHD specifically.
But have you met anybody neurodivergent who doesn't have problems with sleep?
I honestly don't think I've ever met anybody who doesn't have problems with sleep.
I have, and I hate them.
You know what? Yeah, my mother loves to tell me about all the sleep she gets and her sleep quality, which is, you know, now that she can measure that on her Fitbit or her Apple Watch. And that was always a bad competition for me because I do not sleep well. My brother and sister don't sleep well either. So we've got a generation of just... If there's a point in my family line where IQ drops like precipitously, it would be at our generation because none of my siblings have slept in, you know, in decades, really.
Uh-huh. I mean, I still have sleep issues. I have my entire life. I've got a nice regimen of, again, prescribed medication for it. But I learned from those Katie Soros videos that a lot of ADHD people have like delayed sleep phase syndrome or something like that, where we don't really align with the capitalistic standard of falling asleep at 10 or 11 and getting up at 6 or 7 and being productive all day on a factory schedule, where for one thing, it takes us like 2 to 3 hours just to fall asleep.
Yeah, I didn't know, because one of the things that she said that is I've always known that there were sleep issues that were very well associated with neurodiversity, but I didn't know. She said that the average person falls asleep in 20 minutes?
Uh-huh.
What?
Yeah, no. Average for a given value of average. The average neurotypical, maybe. But no, I've never met... I've met them, but again, I hate them. They just lay down and then they go to sleep and that's it.
Yeah, that is very weird. Have you always had sleep issues?
Always.
Or do you always?
Always, as long as I can remember, and then anecdotally from other people before that. It's not just like getting to sleep is difficult, but also staying asleep is difficult. And then waking up is, of course, then also difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the delayed sleep cycle thing, where the time when old man capitalism, when they want you to wake up to go be productive, I'm not there yet. My brain is still in the low peak part. Mm-hmm. So like this morning I woke up and I did my teeth and I made some tea and all of a sudden it'd been 45 minutes. I'm like, how was that 45 minutes? Because my brain just isn't registering memory and time yet. Because mm-hmm. I'm still basically asleep.
Yeah, we instituted saying good morning, I love you every morning, not because we are a disgustingly cute in love couple, which we are,
a little bit,
but
that.
Because one of us, and I won't say which one of us has a little bit of trouble in the mornings.
Well, look at the time.
Being a person or being a pleasant person and is a little grumpy. And so we say, good morning, I love you, as a way to say, I still love you and like you, even though at this moment in time, I'm being a bit of a jerk because it's morning.
I mean, yeah, there's a lot of morning in the mornings, and it's just not fair. It's so gross.
Well, it's one of those things that, so, you know, I have had sleep issues as long as I remember, and mine are often tied in with chronic pain, because I have a chronic pain condition that is especially bad at night. And it started about the same time as I remember my sleep issues starting. But I thought for a long time that those sleep issues in like junior high and high school were related to the fact that teenagers, their sleep needs are very different. They have a much greater need for sleep, and school for a lot of high schoolers starts at 7 a.m.
Yeah, that's something, if memory serves, has been thoroughly researched and shown to be problematic, that like starting school wicked early is detrimental to teenagers learning, because like me, their brains just aren't on yet, and no amount of like shouting from parents or guzzling caffeine can really change that.
Well, and like, I'm sure that's what we should all be doing in high school. It's very healthy for developing brains and bodies to be guzzling caffeine. But, you know, I feel like when we were younger, God, this is one of those moments, that I just talk about being old, but I don't remember caffeine being so easily accessible when I was in high school. You know, like we had to drink, if we wanted to be overly caffeinated, we needed to go to like coffee houses, coffee places, and sit and drink black coffee for hours and hours and hours, which I certainly did. Or there was like Jolt Cola,
mm-hmm.
which was gross, but its claim to fame was that it had, you know, more caffeine than average. Starbucks started to be a thing when I was in high school, but it wasn't as ubiquitous, certainly. And they didn't have all the, you know, the fun drinks that they have now. The best you could do, I think, at the time was a mocha if you didn't just want to drink coffee. And I hate chocolate, but I choked down some of those mochas because it was better to me than just drinking bitter, bitter coffee. But now I feel like, because energy drinks weren't real big until I got into college. So there wasn't Red Bull, there wasn't Monster. So I feel like had I had the opportunity back then, I definitely would have had more of a caffeine issue than I do now. But what's interesting is caffeine is often a way that people with ADHD control their symptoms.
Uh-huh.
And it acts almost, you know, it's kind of the same mechanism as a lot of the stimulant medications that are used for ADHD. So if you have kids with ADHD, teenagers with ADHD who are already having sleep issues on top of the sleep issues that they're going to have just from being high school students, and then dump a bunch of caffeine onto them, I wonder what that does in terms of their ADHD, if they're actually able to settle more and pay attention more in classes.
I was definitely a Mountain Dew kid.
Mm.
And it was, getting up in the morning was such a trial, and it had always been such a trial that, you know, my folks were willing to be like, yeah, sure, fine. Here's a case of Mountain Dew for the next week or two. And then just a couple of those. And then that, you know, led on to, you know, early to mid 20s and terrible life choices. And a Mountain Dew and a cigarette was a really great way to clear out that morning smoker's cough phlegm. It just kind of burns the tubes open and gets you ready for the day. But, you know, from a personal note, I'm kind of glad that I had a crippling caffeine addiction during my more formative years, because it kept me short. So now, transitioning in my mid-30s, I'm not 6 foot like a lot of people in my family. So
is that proven that caffeine stunts your growth?
No idea.
I've heard that, but that was mainly people telling me that me being short was my own fault.
Uh-huh.
Like that I must have had a lot of caffeine, which I don't think I did, but genetically, no. my family is short. But
I do remember there was something that started probably like my senior year of high school or junior or whatever. The school like bought a little cafe like a couple blocks away from the campus, and like ran it with students as like a, hey, here's a life skills class, learn how to run a cafe. And it just did like little sandwiches and coffee and whatever, but it did espresso. And so on one of the days that my friend wasn't working there, we walked in and asked the teacher/manager of the cafe, like, hey, how much espresso do you think it would take to be like medically harmful?
And I'm glad you went to a reliable source, like somebody who could clearly give you the best and most up-to-date scientific information.
You know, now you mention that.
For someone who has such a problem with authority, I find it interesting. I don't think you really wanted to know the answer. I think you guys were just going to do this anyway.
We were going to
do something horrifically dangerous, if possible. And this was like a perfunctory, but we checked with an adult type of thing. But you don't respect the opinion of these people.
I mean, upon reflection, no, I don't. But the story is much better when we say, hey, how much espresso would kill you? And he says 16 shots. We'll say, we'll take 15 each, please. And that was actually the first time I remember having so many stimulants that I went still. Like, I think that was the first effective medicating of my ADHD. Because after I was just like, oh, I feel calm.
We don't condone this.
This is probably not good.
We do not condone this, by the way. And neither of us are medical professionals. Clearly. I think we've clearly demonstrated that.
We don't even play a doctor on TV. Like, didn't even play doctor as kids. That's how aware of my own my own lack of disqualified. No,
I think it's lack of qualifications.
Lack of qualification.
I think it's funny, you know, because some chronically ill people become pseudo doctors, you know, to the point where they know more about their various conditions than any medical professional does, because you kind of have to. And then others are like, nope, I don't know. I don't know. I don't understand. I'm just gonna, you know, and then those people marry each other typically.
Well, I mean, certainly for, I think some of it is, if it's scary to look at, like, mm-hmm. a lot of my like terrifying chronic illness stuff, I know as much as I need to know. But like trans stuff, we have a common saying, you have to become an amateur endocrinologist to get the care you need, because I run into a lot of doctors who don't know what they're talking about at all. You know, I said, I asked the staff at the, actually I probably shouldn't name the hospital, but their, integrated transgender health program. I'm like, hey, how much shorter am I going to get? And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, I'm like 2 inches shorter since I started. Like, that's not a thing. That's a thing. Like 80% of the trans femme people I talk to are like, oh yeah, I got a little shorter. Like,
I like it because you're coming back down to my level.
Yeah.
So I don't have to stretch.
And yet I can still reach things in the Jess jail, the hidden world.
There is a whole universe up above me, like of the top shelf, that I will never know or be able to explore, because I also have really bad balance. So me up on ladders is bad. So if something is up there, it just might as well not exist. So unless you're trying to hide candy from me, in which case I will employ the time-tested method of climbing on the counter and using the long tongs to pull it from off the top shelf. So, you know.
I had been wondering where my long tongs went.
If there's sugar to be had, I will find it. Yeah. And you know what? It's funny because that's when I tend to, I mean, even I don't typically eat a pound of white chocolate chips in a sitting unless it is in the middle of the night, because there's something about those hours when you should be sleeping and you want to be sleeping that for me just make me, like, if I can't have sleep, my body wants carbs and mm-hmm. feels like, all right, if we can't have the one thing, then we're gonna need the other. So yeah, that's when I am my most dangerous to any candy or chips or crackers or anything.
Well, sugar is also a decent painkiller and at least a mood elevator. So like, yeah, you still hurt, but you're slightly less miserable about it.
Yeah. I just wish, because the one thing that Katie Soros mentioned in the last video of hers that I saw on this topic was that people who are neurodivergent often work better in jobs that go from, like, you know, 10 to 6 or 11 to 7. And I have worked those jobs before, but I wish that I could be productive in some of those hours at night that I should be sleeping, but am not sleeping. Because if I got some of that time back, I wouldn't feel as bad about it. But it's not like I could do my taxes at 3 a.m, even though that's something that desperately needs to be done. That those hours are not good for anything, really, but being tired.
Yeah.
It seems like you are a little bit better about when you're up and you don't want to be up, being productive. And by being productive, I mean like playing a video game. Like, you can actually use your brain to do something, again, not quantum physics necessarily, but you can actually like complete an activity.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to play Animal Crossing last night, And I could not for the life of me catch a fish. And I got to the point where it's like, well, I'm not going to throw a Nintendo Switch because I can't catch a fish because that's stupid. But I was very frustrated because I just can't get it together in the middle of the night to do anything remotely productive, but just wish I was asleep.
See, that's what makes me think that you are at least partially asleep for that kind of time, because you're just completely out of it in a way that the closest analog I could think of is being kind of asleep or a bit of a sleepwalker. So you're half asleep and maybe dozing a bit, dropping into some micro sleep, which will just completely destroy any kind of track of attention or ability to like comprehend things.
Mm-hmm. Well, because at this point I am going on like 44 years of this. How old am I? 43, 44, whatever. However old I am, that's how long I've been going with less sleep than needed. So my mother was really convinced that I was sleep deprived. She was the first one who ever told me that I was sleep deprived.
Uh-huh.
Because I didn't ever... That wasn't something, a thought that ever occurred to me. I just, again, thought you kind of, it's one of those things like where you just think that everybody is this way. But she realized how little I was sleeping. She also knew that sometimes I was kind of out of it because I was so exhausted. And so maybe that might have been something that she was seeing. So she hit a point where anytime I could be taking a nap or catching up on anything, she would say, go sleep, because she was convinced that I was always direly in need of sleep, and that if I could take a nap, even if naps are not always the best thing that are advised, you know, she always wanted me to be sleeping when I could be sleeping. So I wonder if those micro sleeps were things that she was catching on to, because that's what I used to do, is I would not be able to sleep. So I would come back downstairs and I would hang out with my mom watching usually something about plane crashes for some reason, or whatever weird movie that she had on. And I would just sit there because it was better than sitting up in bed wanting to be asleep. But yeah, I wasn't with it some of that time.
If you just don't sleep, eventually you die. Your body just cannot function without sleep. There's some research that kind of points out that being awake and moving around is just low-key damaging to your body, like, all the time. So, like, our ideal processing... our body's ideal processing conditions is basically being asleep and being at rest. Usually you're lying down, so your heart doesn't have to work as hard to get the blood up and down you. Respiration is also easier when you're lying down. And if you go long enough without getting really solid sleep, eventually your brain drops into microsleep. And it's just these little moments of unconsciousness that's basically your brain going, we're gonna die. And whether you want to sleep or not, we're sleeping now. And it's one of the reasons why, you know, you really shouldn't drive if you're particularly sleep deprived, because you will fall asleep whether you want to or not.
Oh, that happened once. That was one of the times that I was probably like one of the most dangerous things I've ever done, or situations I found myself in, is I was driving back from a comedy show in Milwaukee, and I was a feature, which is the second comedian typically that goes, often called a middle, and I was paid next to nothing. I mean, really just not very much for this show. And that's why I didn't want to get a hotel room, because that was going to eat up all of my money. And I thought, well, I'll just drive back. So I worked most of the day Friday. I drove to Milwaukee. I did the show. And then I tried to drive home, which was 2 to 3 hours. And on the way back, and I'm sure I was not responsible. And like, I need to leave immediately after my set. I need to go home. You know, I think I had to wait around for them to count out the cash the night to get paid. So I was there. I wasn't drinking. I at least was that smart to not also have a couple beers on top of it. So I was sober, but I probably left at 1 or 2, I'd say, in the morning, and was driving back home. So the highway is empty. And I realized I hit the rumble strip on the left-hand side of the road, and it snapped me awake. And I realized that I could not keep myself awake. Like, my head was going, I just could not keep my eyes open. I felt myself going in and out of sleep. And it was like totally going in and out of consciousness, you know, and all I could think is, oh, this is really bad. This is really bad, because I also went then off to the right and hit the rumble strips on the right side of the highway. And I thought, first of all, and my biggest thought was, I'm going to get pulled over for DUI. Because I was a comedian, you know, in the early 2000s. So that was a big topic among many of us. Was DUI. So I rolled all my windows down. I turned on the AC all the way just so I'd also have extra cold air blasting in my face. I turned my radio all the way up and just desperately tried to stay awake. It didn't occur to me at the time to just pull over on the side of the highway, which isn't super safe anyway, but probably would have been safer than what I was doing. But I did finally get to an exit where there was a Holiday Inn Express. To this day, whenever I see a Holiday Inn Express, my heart goes, because it saved my life that night as far as I was concerned. And so I ended up getting a room that I only slept in for like 4 or 5 hours, you know, because I still had to be home the next day. But and they also had a really good shower, like a really nice shower head with, like, you know, it was very impressive for an express hotel, I thought. So I am a devotee of Holiday Inn Express to this day. But I just remember that feeling of, like, knowing how much danger I was in and how bad this could be, that I was going to crash. I didn't have control. I was losing the whatever little bit of control I had, and I couldn't stop it. I could not be awake if I wanted to be awake. I simply could not. And I think at that point, probably from a combination of nights and nights and nights of just not having slept well, and then that day at night just pushing it, my body was doing exactly what you talked about, was just, no, you have to be asleep. You have to be asleep. And it doesn't have this sense of self-preservation to go, okay, but maybe we'll give you 5 minutes to, like, find an exit. It had to be right then. Yeah, that is one of the things I look back on and go, wow, I can't believe I lived through that at all. Because I hit both sides of the highway dozens of times in those, and it seemed like it went on forever. It probably was 10 minutes.
Rumble strips are one of those things that it came up in something I was learning about, like massive improvements to safety. Like what you ever drive past, like, people doing road construction, and like there's somebody in a pit, like, doing something, and then there's like a dude in, you know, an excavator machine, and then there's like one or two dudes just standing there. Oh yeah, well, all things and all people are dudes.
We tend to use "dude" as gender neutral, but I know not everybody does, so I just wanted to give that.
So there's you know, a worker in a pit, and then there's a worker in an excavating machine, and then there's one or two workers just seemingly standing around. Having those workers literally just stand there. Their job is to pull the person out of the pit if something goes wrong, or their job is to, you know, holler and stop the person in the excavating machine if something goes wrong. And that drops the mortality rate of that job by like 60-70%.
So what you're telling me is I needed somebody in the passenger seat just watching me, ready to, like, pull me out of that seat if something was going wrong, like I was falling asleep.
Yes, you needed me. Yes.
I needed you. See, of course I do. I always do.
Yeah. And
I always have.
Having, have you too. Having having somebody, people always complain like, oh, why there's these workers just standing around. Like, well, not every moment has something for them to do, and it's more expensive for them to leave and come back.
Yeah, and I'm sure also, you're always working every minute of every day at your job, Cecil. Like, calm down.
Cecil.
Yeah, I don't know where you came from exactly. I don't know. I don't know where that one was there. Banging around in my head, but you know, whatever. He's apparently very upset about construction workers and probably does some online shopping or some Netflix viewing at his job, would be my guess. As a manager, yes. I'm sure that there is some
time. On par with the person standing outside the hole, ready there to literally jump in case someone is, you know, in danger. Rumble strips on the highway reduced car accidents by like an appreciable amount once we started putting them in.
I would have died. I mean, because if I didn't hit the rumble strip, the next option was the median. Mm-hmm. You know? And then if I'd managed to survive that going the other way, the rumble strip, there was an embankment, you know, that was uh-huh. the next option. Not to mention, had I come across, I mean, I probably wasn't going to get from Milwaukee to the Chicago suburbs without encountering a car. So at some point in time, without those, I would have, you know, that would have been me or someone else getting hurt or killed. And if it wasn't on that trip, because after that trip, I changed my behavior and it became, okay, no matter, especially like on a Friday when I've worked all day and then I'm going to another show or something, it didn't matter how little I was getting paid, even if it was at a loss, I needed to make arrangements to, you know, either get a hotel room myself, ask the club to provide one for me, stay in a comedy condo or whatever it was, or even like crash with another comic, whatever it was, because I knew that I couldn't do that again, because it was quite bad. So, which leads me to this idea of, you know, we are not the only ones with this challenge for sure. And I have a lot of clients who have sleep issues. And even though sleep is not something I expressly set out to work with clients on, because I work with job coaching and career coaching, sleep is so intertwined with those things that it just becomes a topic of our conversation when we're talking about what jobs or careers are best for someone. That has to be a part of the conversation for a lot of people, because whatever you're doing that goes against what your body is just going to do isn't going to be sustainable. There's a tax to be paid at some point. You may have some discretion as to when you pay that tax, but you can't just pretend like it doesn't exist. So one of the things that Katie Soros mentioned is that you can have perfect sleep hygiene, because I know that's a frustration for me. And I am sure that is a frustration for many others, is if you do talk to a doctor about sleep, usually the first thing they say is they give you a sheet of instructions on good sleep hygiene.
Are you sure it's not your fault?
Right.
Are you sure it's not your fault?
What are you doing? What are you doing that is the problem?
Everything. I'm doing everything I can, because mm-hmm. I have never once in 36 years woken up in the morning and went, I feel refreshed and ready to face the day. Never once.
You know, and so I think some of those are, I mean, I have noticed that some of those are helpful. Like, for instance, I used to fall asleep to the TV, because my racing thoughts would keep me awake if I let them go. And so what I would put on a TV show that I'd seen a billion times, it was usually The West Wing, or like My Cousin Vinny, the movie, or Clue. Death to Smoochie, which is like a terrible movie that I love. Right. So any of those things that were things that I had always loved or loved since childhood, they became my transition to sleep, because my mind could sort of go from the racing thoughts to whatever was on TV. And then, you know, I'd seen all those things. So they weren't interesting enough necessarily to keep me, you know, my attention was not so, I wasn't so rapt that I had to watch it. So I would kind of ease myself into sleep that way. But the light was a problem. Uh-huh. Because the light, having that light on all night was definitely not good. But at the time, I didn't really have a good swap for that. Now I've got sleep phones and they're Bluetooth. And what's great is they lie flat against your ears. It's clearly very fashionable, fashion statement, but the speakers are here. And so you can lay on them, lay flat. And I listen to books that I have listened to 1,000 times. I listen to podcasts or YouTube shows, whatever it is that can take my attention for a little bit and kind of move it into sleep. We definitely keep the room cold because that is very helpful. I get hot very, very, very easily. And if I'm remotely warm, I cannot sleep. I appreciate all the sacrifices you make for me, including keeping our room, the Arctic tundra. Like we have a blizzard today and our AC is on. To be fair, it does get really hot in our apartment still, but AC is a year-round must for us, and that helps a lot with sleep. So I think the thing that I do with my clients is all of the things that are part of that sleep hygiene process, you know, turning off your screen a certain period of time before you go to sleep, or at least using your blue light filters so you're not getting as much blue light straight into your eyeballs as you're trying to sleep. But those topics and things that are of great interest to you might not be the best to pay attention to right before you go to sleep. All of these things that are recommended are things that you should still do, but accept that likely for you, those will not be the only answer. They will be helpful, but they are not going to be the answer.
The answer is burn down capitalism and build a society based around biological needs rather than the needs of capital to expand. And to be fair, it is blizzarding and it is cold outside, but just having the window open wouldn't really work because it's also what I can only explain as Denver. It's very dry.
Very dry.
And it needs to be cold and the air needs to be moist enough that we don't scratch our own skin off in our sleep. And like we've got heavy duty humidifiers running in several rooms.
And so it's our little piece of the Midwest that we're bringing here to Denver. So yeah, so we have to run the humidifiers and that is a constant job maintaining those humidifiers, but that's also part of healthy sleep because it can help. It keeps your sinuses. I hate this word. It keeps your sinuses moist. I know we just lost 10% of our listeners, but
not dry. It keeps them the opposite of dry.
Keeps them the opposite of dry, and that helps your sleep. Also, and the same as you said with your skin, it helps with like skin itching, things like that. It also for us helps keep the dog from going all night because apparently their little mouths get dry too. And so we got to try to keep that air in so we can't just open the windows. We do sometimes, but in the winter, definitely not. If it's spring or summer, and there's a little bit more humidity in the air, then we will keep the windows open a bit. Now that I am, after 5 years of allergy shots, I am allergy free. We can enjoy some of the fresh air. But with those devices, so we've got the AC on, we've got the humidifier on, we have to be careful with the lights that are on those devices. And so making sure those are not too bright. So cover them up. They've got fancy LED stickers you can put on them so that you can still read them and still see what they are. Or you can go a little more low tech and just slap some tape over them or post-it over them, which is what we do. Uh-huh. But I think it's important to do all of those things, but also make allowances for yourself that help you get through your day, regardless of, you know, what people say about naps. Some people think naps are the worst thing in the world. For some people, if you take a nap, it keeps you from being able to sleep later on. I can fall asleep during the day, anytime, anywhere. I could fall asleep again on a movie theater floor. I could fall asleep on I could sleep on a cruise ship, and I was nothing but sick on a cruise ship, but I could still fall asleep. So I can fall asleep during the day anywhere. And so I do take naps if I can. I'm not, I can't always nap when I want to nap, which is frustrating. I do, you know, so if you find that grabbing a nap helps you, do that. It also can be good to, you know, even if nothing else, if you can take some time just to close your eyes and do nothing else, that can, it's like plugging a slow charger into your phone. Like, it's still getting juice. It's not going to fully recharge the thing quickly, but it's going to give you something that's better than nothing. So even if you can just close your eyes for a few minutes here or there, that can be helpful. If you can change your work schedule to start at a time that works better for you. So if you can do, you know, going from an 8 to 5 to a 9 to 6, a 10 to 7, you know, 11 to 8, that can certainly be helpful. It is better. The one thing I will say is it is ultimately better, in my experience and for many of my clients, to get up at the same time every day. That helps condition your body to know, even if I'm tired, it's going to, that's going to become the wake up time. And that can be painful because on the weekend, you're going to want to sleep in, or whenever you have time, you're going to want to sleep in. But a headache doctor at the Diamond Headache Clinic gave me this tidbit, which is, yes, get up at the same time every day and brush your teeth, have a cup of coffee, eat a bowl of oatmeal, whatever you want, but then go back to bed because you got up. That's the important part, is getting up, but you can go back to sleep for as long as you want, and that won't trigger headaches, and it's not as bad for messing up your schedule. So get up at the same time every day, but go back to bed. You can also, some people find that meditation and mindfulness cause them to drop off to sleep at night. There are specific meditations and mindfulness activities that are geared towards sleep specifically, so go for it. For me, I find that my sleep problems are made infinitely worse by my chronic pain. And so making sure that I also take my pain medicine, even if I'm not in pain at that moment, I need to get ahead of it and take my pain medicine proactively so that when the sleepy meds kick in, then I am able to sleep at that moment because my pain is taken care of. So all of these things, I also would say, you know what, if you're laying in bed and you are thinking of eating a particular thing, or you're thinking of, oh God, I just want some water, or, you know, if you have to go to the bathroom, we are not good at listening to those proprioceptive signals, or no, interoceptive signals. Sorry. The best thing to do at that point is just to satisfy that craving so you can go to sleep. So if you can have, you know, a little handful of something, if you can get your water, whatever it is, because by the time you're feeling those sensations in your body, they've probably been present for quite a while. And so, you know, honor those things. Of course, if you have something like binge eating disorder, which is, we'll do another episode on that another day. I know that's a whole separate issue for sleep, but for the most part, you know, I'd say do all of the things that doctors tell you to do, but also listen to your body and whatever concessions you can make, definitely, definitely try. Working with a coach can be great because they can help you track how you're feeling, how your performance is, how you're performing when it comes to your goals, you know, how you're coming across to other people, because you might not know how sleep affects your moods. And so having a neurodiversity coach can be really, really helpful in these types of situations. And just do the best you can, because that's all we can do.
Well, I think that about wraps it up for this episode of Gifted Kid, Messy Adult. If you like the show and would like to support us, please like, subscribe, and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find our podcasts. You can also find and subscribe to us on YouTube at Gifted Kid, Messy Adult. All of that will be under the Neurodiverse Workplace channel banner.
Coach Jessica Michaels. Coach Jessica Michaels. YouTube, it's all under Coach Jessica Michaels. You'll find this. You'll find the Procrastination Fairy. You'll find videos on being neurodivergent in the workplace as well. In addition, hyperfixation videos in addition to this feed. You can also find all of our media on my website at CoachJessicaMichaels.com. That's CoachJessicaMichaels.com. You can find everything that that we produce when it comes to neurodiversity content. You'll have some paid courses there, a lot of free resources. You'll also be able to sign up for the Neurodiverse Professionals Community, NPC, which is a community of neurodivergent and allies that are just working together to make things better in the world of work, so you can share and support and commune with others who know what you are going through. We also have a Patreon where you can support all of these efforts at the Neurodiverse Workplace on Patreon. And Ellie, where can they find you?
You can find me at elliemichaelsproductions.com if you're interested in some customized commercial video solutions, video drives, engagement, and I can help you do that. The future is complicated enough, I just film it. But I think that'll just about wrap it up for our wrapping up.
We got a lot going on, no wonder we're so tired.
See, that's the perfect thing to end it on, so I'm just not going to say anything else and just...